Lucy's 21st birthday, Tuesday, July 2nd, was a full, busy day. In the morning, I had a meeting with Simone and Tommy Atkins, Art Winnefelt, and George Brooke Poults in the West Hall on the script of Crossing the Trails of Texas. It's going to be a good film, and better for us putting our heads together on it ahead of time. We have now begun, very late in the day, a month or so ago, an earnest, hard effort to get all the cooperation from the West Side about scheduling, knowledge of important events, and all of the evaluation and careful scrutiny of me, Simone, Liz, to make these last 10 or 12 monthly films and these probably last two trip films of mine as high caliber as possible. I groan that we didn't begin it 2 years ago when the film program began. Next, I worked with Ashton at the desk, and then a brief amusing break to go down to the North Portico where Congressman Jack Brooks had just driven up in a pickup truck containing 50 magnolia seedlings about 3 feet high that had been germinated with seeds from my old home, the Elms, carefully raised by Mr. Pincus in the Capitol greenhouse. Now he was bringing them down to me to give away to friends. A funny man, Jack, shrewd, tough, a battler, and yet a fondness for antiques and forests. Back upstairs, I met with Robin Duke in the yellow oval room, soon with Angie, and we reviewed the Latin American trip, gifts, my program, biographies of the principals, the chiefs of state of the five countries, and their ambassadors, and went over the program in Texas step by step. Then I lunched on a tray in my room. Sometime in the afternoon, I called Lucy. I don't remember just when, but I do remember her voice. Happy, hurried, not time enough to talk to me, but too respectful to say so. All signs of adulthood. I said all my love and goodbye quickly. Linda was there and in good spirits, and she, Lucy, was much relieved about her. That much I did gather. Then I signed mail in the afternoon. Saw a film on President Truman in the theater. It was done by the Wolper firm, who are working on one about Lyndon, to be shown on Lyndon's birthday at the convention, and a copy to become the property of the library. It was good enough. Not quite as good as the Bud Benjamin one on FDR, I thought. And then a little session with Jim Ketchum in his office, back upstairs to work with Ashton, interrupted close to 4:30, by a hurried call to go down to the South Grounds with Lyndon to welcome the Westmorelands. I get these calls at all times of the day on a moment's notice. It's a challenge to have combed hair and lipstick. The helicopter settled down, and the general stepped out, one of the most fascinating men I have met in my 5 years here, and his delightful little Kitsy by his side. We went up to the West Hall and had refreshments and talk. Walt Rostow came over, bringing Andre Maillard, with whom Lyndon had an appointment. They lingered, and we all talked for a while, and then Lyndon went back to his office with Andre, and I took the Westmorelands to the third floor to the room that they have used several times. It was a busy day, the phone ringing every moment, the desk still piled high, but I was making some inroads on it. The Henderson Shufflers came at 6, and we had a delightful visit in the yellow room. He is the real creator and guiding spirit of the Texan Hall of Cultures, and if the Lyndon Johnson Library turns out its exhibits as well as that does, I will rise up and cheer. We all of us talked at once about the exhibit, how great it is. I especially congratulated him on the section on Negro culture, and he told me a delightful little story about a Negro lawyer named George Washington Jr., whom he had met and befriended a good many years ago. And when he found himself faced with having to put together this exhibit, he called on George Washington Jr., who was of inestimable help in doing research and in seeking out Negro families in Texas who had old records, old pictures, that would add the artifacts to the story that Henderson Shuffler wanted to tell. He would probably never have had access to them or knowledge of them otherwise. It was a hot, sultry summer day, and a storm was brewing outside. And as we sat and talked in the yellow room, it was the most glorious drama outside. Great black clouds with lightning knifing through and thunder crashing across the heavens. It was a beautiful vista to watch the Washington Monument and the Jefferson Memorial against this display. Another display will take place beginning tomorrow on the Mall, and it is for this that Henderson Shuffler has come to town. A show of folk music, folk art, handicrafts, a large part of it by Texans on the Mall. One of Dylan Ripley's plans to bring them all to life. When the shufflers left, I went to the bowling lanes and had 3 quick games, and then came back and invited the Westmorelands to come down and join me for drinks, and had a few moments for that personal sort of talk that I don't get to do when Lyndon is around. Titsy told an amusing story about life in the military, that when you're stationed in some far eastern place, you're likely to have quite a few servants and the house well taken care of. And what a change it is when you come back to the United States and don't have it. She was waiting for the general in Honolulu, doing all her own cooking and cleaning, and he returned from Saigon with a visiting general or two, and as they talked, he called out, "Bring in some cold beers, please." And in between shoving the steaks in and setting the table, she brought the cold beers in. Pretty soon, he asked for some more. And then at the end of the evening, as they said goodbye, she said, "Just a minute, General," putting her 2 little hands together in the gesture of Eastern servants. "Number one boy must open door." She must be a joy to live with. Pretty, humorous, capable, and strong. And then I thanked the General for taking Linda Bird's cookies to Chuck. And he got a sort of a baffled expression on his face, and then he roared with laughter and said, "Those cookies sure were good." He said, "There wasn't any address on them, and I had lots of packages, and I didn't know who they were for. So we opened them and ate them." President Lyndon came in, and the talk shifted to more substantive matters. General Westmoreland said, "There's an entirely new dimension for a commanding general these days because of the press. He must spend hours clearing up misconceptions, explaining. The press becomes a part of his job." He talked of Bunker, whom absolutely everybody that I know rates as A-1, of General Taylor and Buzz Wheeler, the whole picture of the military and the government. General Westmoreland said, "Some of my decisions necessarily were in part in the field of diplomacy and politics. That too is inevitable in this sort of war, this new thing." To my great pleasure, he told Lyndon, "I have gotten to work on that history for you. I ought to have it finished in 2 or 3 weeks. I'm sure this must be something for the library. How this war has looked for the, is it 4 years that General Westmoreland has been over there? How it looks through the eyes of one most qualified to know. It should be a very important contribution years from now." Lyndon went to his night reading at 11, and I to bed and a rub. And it was only later, several days later, that I realized that for the first time in 13 years, I had passed July the 2nd without a feeling of triumph, a sigh of relief, and quiet congratulations to Lyndon that another year had gone by in good health after his heart attack on July the 2nd in 55. I had simply forgotten it. The shadow has receded.